Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much, Stephanie, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect workshop, treatment update for adults living with acute lymphocytic lymphoblastic leukemia, or ALL. Now, today's program is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care and many other cancer organizations, and it really is because of that collaboration and your interest in this important program that we have so many of you on the call today. So we have over 444 participants on the call today, and you come from all of the United States, from all parts of the United States, and we also have international participants from Bangladesh, Canada, Kenya, Lebanon, Russia, Tanzania, and United Kingdom. So you really come from all over the world, and I have to say it's a credit to all of you that you've been on this program today, that you're joining us. Today's activity was made possible by Pfizer Oncology and Onyx, an Amgen subsidiary, and I really want to thank them for their support of this program today. I'd like to turn your attention for a moment to the electronic materials that you've received from Cancer Care, or paper packets that you might have received, in which we provide you information about today's program. There is an evaluation form, and we ask you to please complete that evaluation form and return that to us. We very much appreciate your feedback. Indeed, this is the beginning of 2015. We're planning many programs for the year, and your feedback really makes a tremendous difference for us in really being most up to date with, you know, what you need us to do. So we very much really rely on your feedback. Indeed, today's program is a topic that many of you have asked us to offer, and so we then make it possible to do these programs. There may be treatment side effect issues that you're dealing with, all kinds of issues that you may be confronting, other types of cancers, other concerns. Please tell us, and we will try very hard to offer those programs. Now, we have wonderful speakers today, and I want to begin by introducing our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Raul Tibes, and Dr. Tibes is consultant, Division of Hematology and Medical Oncology, Director, Acute and Chronic Leukemia Program, Scholar in Clinical Research, Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, Assistant Professor, Mayo College of Medicine, Mayo Clinic Cancer Center. Dr. Tibes is going to address an overview of acute lymphocytic lymphoblastic leukemia, or ALL, in adults, current standard of care, therapy for relapsed refractory ALL, and communicating with your healthcare team. It's my pleasure to turn this program now over to Dr. Tibes.
Yeah, thank you very much, and welcome everybody of the participants. I will give you a little bit of an overview of what I usually tell my patients when I see a patient with newly diagnosed ALL, acute lymphoblastic leukemia lymphoma. So what is ALL? ALL is essentially a cancer of the white blood cells, and specifically one cell lineage, which is the lymphoid lineage, which the name says, acute lymphoblastic leukemia. What that means essentially, the white cells called lymphoid cells, they grow more rapidly than the normal blood cells in the bone marrow. By growing more rapidly, more quickly, they spread out in the bone marrow, take over the bone marrow, push away the normal blood cells, which are the red cells that carry the oxygen, the platelets that help everybody clot if somebody is bleeding, as well as the normal white blood cells that help us fight infection. So essentially, the lymphoid, the ALL cells, spread out in the bone marrow. That's why patients have low blood counts in the peripheral blood. And I should mention that all of the blood cells that we can measure from a regular blood draw from the blood, from your arm, from the vein, all of those cells are produced in the bone marrow. Once those cells in the bone marrow are formed and become normal, mature blood cells, they are released into the bloodstreams. So initially, we get an idea from the peripheral blood, from a regular blood draw, if, for example, the patient is very anemic or the white cells are often in ALL, the white cells are very high in the peripheral blood, so we get an indication that there's something going on in the blood and in the bone marrow. For example, if a patient comes into a doctor's office and feels tired and doesn't feel so good and a blood test is done, and all of a sudden we find that the white blood cell count is very high, and we see those ALL cells, the next step would be to go and do a bone marrow biopsy. Because I mentioned all the blood cells are produced in the bone marrow. So first we go to the peripheral blood, and then if we have the suspicion that there may be something going on in the bone marrow, we physicians obtain a bone marrow biopsy and aspirate for final and definitive confirmation of what is going on or if this is indeed a leukemia. So which brings me to some of the diagnostic workup and how patients often present. Patient can present, they are tired and fatigued because they are anemic, because the normal red cells, they are pushed away from the leukemia cells in the bone marrow. They can come to the doctor and then a blood test is done. I mentioned that before. Or patients have bleeding and they go to the emergency room because the bleeding doesn't stop. Some younger patients often have bone pain and don't feel so well. Sometimes the lymph nodes can be swollen as well. So once we have the suspicion of a leukemia, we obtain a blood test and a bone marrow biopsy, and those, both of them, particularly the bone marrow biopsy, is sent for several different tests, including a flow cytometry, where we can look at what kind of subtype of ALL it is. We also send molecular studies and what is called cytogenetics. Without becoming too molecularly detailed, every cell in the human body has chromosomes. We get 23 chromosomes from the father and 23 from the mother, so 46. So scientists, or as part of the clinical workup, we can measure and look at those chromosomes by several means. And often in leukemia, we can see there are either too many chromosomes in the leukemia cells or not enough chromosomes, or there are certain two chromosomes are flipped next to each other, or some of the chromosomes may be lost. So we call this analysis the cytogenetic analysis. Why is this important? Because it helps us to risk stratify the patients, essentially to know what is the risk and how well may either chemotherapy work or maybe what kind of therapy to give, as well as any other further treatment for the patient after the initial treatment. So cytogenetics is a way of looking at the chromosomes. What I also tell my patients, because patients are obviously concerned, is those genetic abnormalities, they're only in leukemia cells. So the rest of the body's health and the rest of the patient is normal. And for the most part, those genetic abnormalities, they are not inherited. So it's really just in the leukemia cells. Then as part of the workup for an acute leukemia, obviously is the physical examination, the doctor talks to the patient, how long has this been going on. We do several other blood tests. We look at the organ function, the kidney function, the liver function, because those are all important parameters helping us decide how fit the patient is. We ask what the patient can do. Obviously, the age plays a role, and we'll come back to that in a second. We ask if there are any neurological symptoms. For male patients, we ask if there's anything, if there's a swelling in the testicles, because ALL can go to the testicles. We ask if there's any headaches or any neurological symptoms, because ALL also can go to the central nervous system and either directly or line the outside of the central nervous system. So those are all important information we get from the initial visit and the work that we perform. Once we have established the diagnosis of an acute lymphoblastic leukemia, then we have obtained the different tests. We usually risk stratify the leukemia. And there are a couple of high points and highlights I would like to mention. So I talked about the molecular features or markers. They are important. There's one leukemia which is called the BCR-ABL positive or Philadelphia chromosome positive acute lymphoblastic leukemia. This is the BCR-ABL. This is a translocation between the ninth chromosome and the 22nd chromosome. Essentially, two chromosomes that usually sit side by side now are flipped together, and they activate a gene which is called BCR-ABL that helps the leukemia cells grow faster than the normal bone marrow cells. That's where they can spread out. This is important because for the last 10 to 15 years, we have medications available, which we call them the BCR-ABL tyrosine kinase inhibitors. And there are several of them approved in different countries. The first one was imatinib, or in the U.S. called Gleevec. Other approved ones are nilotinib, or called in the U.S. Tasigna. There's also Sprycel, called dasatinib, which is called Sprycel. There is bosutinib, and most recently for relapse, there's also ponatinib. So there's several so-called BCR-ABL tyrosine kinase inhibitors available. So the first decision step is this a BCR-ABL or Philadelphia chromosome-positive ALL? Then the patient would receive chemotherapy, and one of those inhibitors would be added to the chemotherapy. For the Philadelphia chromosome-positive ALL, one should also highly consider a stem cell transplantation after the patient achieves a complete remission. So maybe I should back up for a second. So the first step of the treatment in leukemia is achieving an absence of the leukemia. So what doctors do, they have to admit, after we know what kind of subtype of leukemia it is, the patient is being admitted to a hospital, and then therapy is started. That therapy for most or almost all of the ALLs is a combination of several chemotherapy drugs, and that depends a little bit on the subtype of the leukemia. The first goal then is, after a week or after months of treatment, to achieve a complete absence of the leukemia, which is called the complete remission, or CR. Essentially, the chemotherapy wipes out the leukemia cells, but also wipes out the bone marrow. The normal, healthy cells, they're still left. They were just suppressed by the leukemia. So the normal, healthy bone marrow cells, hopefully, or most of the time, the majority of the time, grow faster than the leukemia cells, and they retake the bone marrow, so to speak. So at the end, you have recovery of your normal blood cell formation in the bone marrow, and you find normal blood counts from a blood draw from the peripheral vein, and that's called a complete remission, or CR. After that, there are several other rounds of chemotherapy, unfortunately, involved in order to keep the leukemia at bay. So having said this, once doctors know what subtype, we can treat either with chemotherapy, adding this BCR-ABL inhibitor. Once the patient achieves a complete remission for those BCR-ABL-positive leukemias, a stem cell transplantation should be considered, or at least the patient, in my opinion, should be referred to talk to a stem cell transplantation doctor. What is a stem cell transplantation? A stem cell transplantation is essentially taking cells, stem cells from the bone marrow and from the blood, either from a sibling, if the sibling matches the immune type of the patient, or if not, there's a large registry out there, that's the bone marrow donor registry, where hundreds of thousands of volunteers offer that they would give their cells and their stem cells, which are collected from the peripheral blood often, similar to a dialysis machine, and those volunteers would say, if there's a patient that needs new stem cells, I would be willing to give them part of my blood and part of my stem cells that can then be given to the patient after chemotherapy. So that's a stem cell transplantation, an allogeneic stem cell transplantation. So this is the BCR-ABL or Philadelphia chromosome-positive leukemia. For elderly patients who have this type of leukemia, we can also give treatment such as steroids with one of those BCR-ABL inhibitors. And elderly, if the patient is anywhere above 60, 65, and 70. So not every patient may be eligible or may be a good candidate, as we say, for an intensive chemotherapy plus those new drugs. However, there are several other treatments developed that combine one of those BCR-ABL inhibitors together with a lighter chemotherapy or some other treatments which can have very good response rates. In adults, the BCR-ABL-positive leukemia is more frequent than in children. So now backing off and coming to the other types of leukemia, so once we have the diagnosis, once we know if the BCR-ABL is positive or negative, so let's say it's negative. So the other option is so the next step would be if the patient is a younger patient or an older patient. So for a BCR-ABL negative ALL, for younger patients below the age of 40, maybe a little higher, 45 to 50 in some centers, the official guidelines often state 40, but we sometimes go higher in terms of the age up to 45 or 50. So those younger patients, they should receive an intensive chemotherapy with several combination drugs if they can tolerate it or if doctors think they can tolerate it. And I think it's important to mention here that over the last several years, there is more and more information coming out from clinical trials that more intensive regimen that are similar to therapies used in children and pediatric patients can also be very effective in those younger adults. And younger adults are defined in this situation above the age of 14 to the age around 45. Children also can develop acute lymphoblastic leukemia at any age, often younger children who are even infants or several years of age. Children below the age of 16 to 18 and teenagers below the age of 16 to 18 are often much better in tolerating the chemotherapy, and they have a higher chance of being cured with chemotherapy alone. Based on this finding, those pediatric therapies, so they were modeled and also given to adult patients above the age of 18 to 40. And what was found in those studies is that when a pediatric leukemia regimen or treatment was given to younger adults or young adults, those young adults actually did much better in terms of even their survival several years after the leukemia. Based on that, there were several large trials from different leukemia groups in the United States and other countries confirming that. So I think as of today, the standard for the younger adult patient population should be a pediatric-inspired or pediatric-modeled leukemia regimen. And you should ask your doctor about what kind of regimen, you know, am I getting, or my relative or my friend. For older patients above the age of 40 to 50, there are several regimens available that can also achieve very high remission rates. One consideration for the older patients is if they should go to receive an allogeneic stem cell transplantation or a bone marrow transplantation. Again, this is part of the workup from the beginning, and this is informed or based on what the cytogenetics show, because the cytogenetics help us group the patients into the poor risk versus the good risk leukemias. So I think the point I want to make is, based on the age and based on the molecular subtype, there may be different treatment therapies. For the younger patients that do not have the BCR-ABL, a pediatric-inspired, more intensive regimen can be given. If there are some unfavorable or poor-risk cytogenetics or chromosome studies, a stem cell or bone marrow transplantation should be considered. For younger patients who have more favorable or good-risk cytogenetics, they may be able to be cured or have a high chance of being cured just with chemotherapy if the pediatric regimens are used. One other important factor in the treatment in general for any kind of leukemia treatment, or particular for ALL, is what we call minimal residual disease monitoring. I think it becomes a little too complicated right now, but I would like to mention that word MRD, or minimal residual disease. This essentially means by some fancy molecular tests, and there are different tests how we can measure that, it's essentially measuring if there are any residual leukemia cells left after the first or second months of treatment. And these MRD, or minimal residual disease, is important because it helps us then further direct the patient either in more chemotherapy, maybe more intensive chemotherapy after the first or second months to try to achieve even a deeper response, even a better response, to get away with the very residual leukemia cells left, or if there are a lot of leukemia cells left at the end of the first or second months of treatment, a stem cell transplantation may also be considered. So it makes a difference. So ask your doctor about minimal residual disease monitoring. There may be a challenge since this may not always be available in every medical center and even in large academic medical centers because it is still early in the disease and treatment. However, it is an important point. As the next point, I want to come to treatment for relapse and refractory ALL. Depending on, in the ideal scenario, and very often, we're able to treat ALL very effectively, achieve very high remission rates, which meaning is the absence of leukemia, and with prolonged treatment, there's a higher rate in many patients that the leukemia stays away and never comes back. Prolonged treatment, often treatment for ALL, must be given for 2 or 3 years. But the treatment intensity gets less after the first half year or so. So the first couple of months and the first up to half a year is more intensive, and then we need to give a maintenance regimen, which are either oral medications or oral chemotherapy drugs, and every few months maybe an intravenous chemotherapy drug, in order to achieve that the leukemia stays away. We call this the maintenance treatment. And I think it's important to mention that the maintenance therapy is an outpatient treatment. And most patients can actually go back to living their normal life, including going to work after the first couple of months or first half a year of treatment. For patients who go to a stem cell transplantation, and after the stem cell transplantation, they may not necessarily need the maintenance, and often they do not get maintenance treatment, except if they have the BCR-ABL, which is the Philadelphia chromosome positive acute leukemia. So having said this, coming to back to the relapsed refractory treatment for ALL. So if the patient, if the leukemia is coming back several years after the initial treatment and it was felt that the patient is cured or was cured, we can repeat either the initial chemotherapy or there are several other medications or treatment strategies out there. So essentially giving a chemotherapy regimen again and trying to achieve a second remission. That would be the ideal scenario. So for any leukemia that has relapsed or is refractory to the initial treatment, an allogeneic stem cell transplantation should be performed if a second complete remission is achieved. And that second complete remission, again, is the absence of measurable leukemia and the recovery of the normal blood counts. So first of all, we have to achieve that second remission because that's important. If the patient has a lot of leukemia left after his salvage treatment, the chance of a stem cell transplant working is less. What do we do if a second chemotherapy doesn't work for the patient and he's not able to achieve a remission? Sometimes we can give a third chemotherapy combination regimen and treatment that still may have a chance of achieving a remission. At some point, chemotherapy may not work anymore, which brings me now to some of the more experimental treatments. Over the last couple of years, there was fortunately the development of several new treatments. A lot of those treatments, they center around finding treatments for the molecular markers that are on the surface of the leukemia cells. They are so-called antibody-based treatment. An antibody is something that is recognizing, it's a protein that is recognizing a structure in the cells. So there are several antibodies that were developed over the last couple of years that target what is called a CD19. I do not want to go into the details of those molecular aspects, but essentially CD19 is like a zip code on the leukemia cells, and scientists and clinicians have developed treatments, so-called antibody treatments, that very specifically can recognize those surface molecules on those leukemia cells. One is CD19, the other is CD22, for example. And different companies have developed different antibodies against those surface molecules on the leukemia cells. There, none of them is approved yet, but several of them are more advanced in clinical trials and in clinical investigations, and quite good responses have been seen in patients where chemotherapy doesn't work anymore. Another similar strategy has been developed, and Dr. Litzo, my colleague on the call, has also been instrumentally involved in those, which are called bispecific antibodies. One of those medications just recently was approved, which is called blinatumomab. This is essentially another antibody that recognizes the CD19 on the leukemia cells, but is also able to bring in some normal T cells from the patient himself. And those T cells are immune cells that can recognize and destroy cancer cells. So essentially, blinatumomab is approved for relapsed and refractory acute lymphoblastic leukemia and is now a treatment option that is available for everybody out there in the community, at least in the United States currently. It is an infusional regimen, meaning it's a continuous infusion, and there's some experience to how it is given. However, it is an option out there right now.
Well, thank you very much. This is really extraordinary, Dr. Tibbis. I know that you want to conclude with a bit about the communicating with the healthcare team, and then Dr. Litzo will follow you. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Tibbis, for an excellent presentation, and I know there'll be questions to you during the Q&A. And our next speaker is Dr. Martha Litzo, Professor of Medicine, Chair ECOG Akron Leukemia Committee, Chair Marlowe Disease Group, Mayo Clinic. Dr. Litzo is going to address new treatment approaches and targeted therapy, the important role of clinical trials, practical tips to manage complications and side effects, and quality of life concerns. Dr. Litzo?
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you today appreciate Cancer Care offering the invitation for me to speak. Dr. Tibbis gave an excellent summary, an excellent overview of acute lymphoblastic leukemia, and so I just want to embellish on a few points that he made and some of the topics that he discussed. One important point to add to what he mentioned is that there's two subtypes of ALL, and these relate to the types of lymphocytes that the leukemia originates from. So there's what we call B-cell or B-lineage ALL, and these are cells that normally make immune globulins or proteins that help our immune system to function, but obviously in ALL have now become malignant. There are also cells that are called T cells, and T stands for thymus, which is a gland in the middle of our chest where these cells normally mature. But these cells, again, in someone with T cell ALL, have become abnormal and form the leukemia. So in terms of new treatment approaches, Dr. Tibbis again talked about chemotherapy approaches, and he emphasized the importance of using an intensified program in younger adults, which has been shown to improve outcomes and is now the preferred approach in younger adults with ALL, whether it be a B-cell or T-cell origin. He also talked about some of these new antibody approaches. So again, the immunoglobulins or proteins that the B cells make are also called antibodies. And normally, in the normal situation, the antibodies made by the normal B cells will attach to bacteria and send a signal to the immune system so that they are destroyed and the infection is fought off. But years ago, scientists developed antibodies that could react against cells so that they could attach to cells. And there's a number of these antibodies that have been developed over the years and are utilized in a variety of different cancers. And have also had some role in ALL, But in more recent years, this antibody model has been further developed, and different strategies have been used, different combinations, combining the antibody with either chemotherapy drugs or certain toxins to make them more potent and killing the leukemia cells have been developed. And Dr. Tibbis mentioned this protein that is on the B ALL cells called CD19, and it's on present on virtually all patients on their leukemia cells if they have the B cell variety, and so it's an excellent target for a development of an antibody against it. And he mentioned blinatumomab, which is bispecific, so it's bi means two, and it's bringing another cell of the immune system, actually a normal T cell, so not a leukemic T cell, but a normal one in close proximity to the leukemia cell and allowing it to be killed. And that has been FDA approved, as he mentioned, and is available now for patients. In terms of clinical trials, there's a national clinical trial going on now that is utilizing blinatumomab for newly diagnosed patients, and this is a trial where we're seeing if it can enhance the response with chemotherapy and improve outcomes. So we're hopeful that that will be of benefit. Another immune-based approach, again using CD19, is to take a portion of an antibody and insert it into a normal immune cell, again a normal T cell, so that it more directly brings the T cell in proximity to the leukemia cell. And you may have heard of this. This is the chimeric antigen receptor T cell approach, or the CAR cells, C-A-R. Can allow these T cells that are brought in proximity to the leukemia cell to kill it. And this is actually taking some of the patient's own T cells out of the body, modifying them to add this antibody portion and some other molecules that make these cells more potent, and then using them against the leukemia cells. So this is still investigational, but it's showing promise, and we're hopeful that it will be able to be more widely developed. We haven't made as much progress in T-cell ALL in terms of new treatments, but there is a molecular or a gene abnormality in T-cell ALL. It's a gene called NOTCH, N-O-T-C-H, that is often mutated in patients who have T-cell ALL. And NOTCH is normally important in the T-cell development, so it seems that when it becomes damaged or mutated, that it arrests the development of the cell and the cells become leukemic. So there are a number of drugs that are called NOTCH inhibitors that are in development to treat T-cell ALL. So these are just some examples of new treatments that are in development, and it's really a very exciting time in ALL treatment. For many years, we weren't making much progress, but now a number of the things that Dr. Tibbis talked about and I've mentioned here are really giving us greater optimism in our ability to treat this leukemia. Now, the other thing I want to talk about is the important role of clinical trials, and I think that's really exemplified by what I just said, in that these new treatments that we're talking about are being tested in clinical trials, and it's the only way that we can know if these treatments are effective. Much work is done before they come to clinical trials so that we can determine as best as we can that they will work and will help patients. But the only final proof is when they're actually given to patients and we see how well they work. It's also important to remember that the treatments that we have up to now that we consider the standard treatments were all developed in clinical trials previously. And so the treatment that you all may have benefited now was based on clinical trials that were done previously. Now, for any of you that have gone through treatment for ALL, you know that there are side effects and complications that can come up as a result of the treatment, and it's important that those be addressed. So the first thing I always tell my patients is, you know, let me know what's going on. Tell me what things are bothering you, and I try to specifically ask them about the common side effects. But don't be shy in letting your doctors and healthcare providers know the things that you're dealing with. Nausea and vomiting can be a big factor. We have better anti-nausea drugs than we used to. So oftentimes we can keep that under control, but it can be a challenge. The development of leukemia and the treatment you go through can be quite fatiguing, and I can't emphasize enough the importance of regular exercise. This doesn't have to be running a marathon, but just doing some sort of regular exercise every day, either walking or exercise, bicycle or something like that, can help to counteract the effects of the leukemia and the treatment. Sometimes the chemotherapy drugs can damage some of the internal organs, and we monitor very closely for that. Sometimes there can be nerve damage that can cause numbness and pain in the feet and hands, and we do have effective treatment for those that can help to lessen the impact of that. Patients often ask about complementary alternative medicines, supplements, massage therapy, acupuncture, things like that. And I keep an open mind on these, and I think that these can supplement your treatment and be helpful, but it's important to let your healthcare providers know that you're considering this, particularly if you want to take supplements, because they can interact with the chemotherapy drugs and they could lessen the benefit of the treatment. So it's important to keep this in mind and be aware of that and keep those communication channels open. So these complications, side effects can all impact a person's quality of life, and we're very cognizant of that as providers and you know, want to be sure that we address your concerns in that area as well. We know that the development of leukemia is a life-altering event, and our goal is not just to pump chemotherapy drugs into you, but also make sure we address you as a whole person and address the side effects and your quality of life concerns. So with that, I'll stop and thank you again.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Lutzow. That was a really excellent presentation. I have to say you and Dr. Tibbetts are a wonderful team, actually a wonderful presenter. I know there will be wonderful questions for you during the Q&A. Our next presenter is Ms. Maria Chi. Ms. Chi is our director of our internship program here at Cancer Care, and she's an oncology social worker and will be addressing Cancer Care's pre-psychosocial services and programs and the role of support groups. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Ms. Chi.
Thanks, Carolyn. When you're first diagnosed with a cancer like leukemia, it can be an overwhelming experience. You're faced with a series of choices and may not know where to turn. Talking to a Cancer Care social worker can help you get the support you need. Cancer Care is a staff of licensed master's-level social workers, and all of our services are completely free of charge. We are experienced in helping people manage the emotional, physical, and financial challenges that come with a diagnosis. Cancer can be experienced as a loss that manifests itself in many ways for both patients and caregivers. That's why it's so important to have an outlet and to have someone to talk to who will be supportive and understanding. This can mean talking one-on-one with a Cancer Care social worker or joining one of our support groups. Cancer Care offers face-to-face groups in the New York area, as well as telephone and online groups. These groups offer an opportunity to talk with other people impacted by cancer, along with the help of a Cancer Care social worker to facilitate the group. Participating in a support group can be helpful simply by allowing you to talk with others who are in a similar situation and who truly understand in a way that no one else can. Certainly, a cancer like leukemia can have a significant impact on your finances, and for many of the people I talk to every day, this is an overwhelming aspect of cancer. Cancer Care provides limited financial assistance to help with transportation to treatment or help with home care, child care, or pain medication. A Cancer Care social worker can help you feel less alone by providing a listening ear and counseling you as you navigate the cancer experience. Please contact us at 1-800-800-800. 813-4673 or go to cancercare.org for more information about our oncology social work support. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Maria. That was excellent. And now we have time for questions. We have a lot of time for questions. I'm going to ask Stephanie to bring all of our speakers on board, and we're going to ask you to go ahead and ask questions, and Stephanie will explain to you how to queue up for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Those of you on the web may submit questions by clicking ask a question. Again, to ask a question, please press star then one at this time.
We have a question from one of our online participants, and the question has to do with the feeling fatigued all the time. What can I do to have more energy? Dr. Lizzo, could you address that question in terms of the side effect?
Well, certainly it's something to discuss with your healthcare team so that they can look at your overall situation, your laboratory results, see if there's anything there that can be worked on or corrected or improved on that may help give you more energy. I mentioned during my presentation the importance of regular exercise, and I can't emphasize that enough. So if you're not doing that now, I would encourage you to get into that and start doing that. There aren't really specific medications that we can necessarily give to raise a person's energy. Sometimes ones that we think about using can have side effects that we may not want to have you experience. Steroids, prednisone, medicines like that are actually part of the treatment of ALL at different phases of the program, the treatment program that you're on, and they can give people a boost of energy, but it's somewhat of an artificial boost and not one that's easily sustained. So, you know, I think the keys are really to discuss it with your healthcare team, make sure that they're looking at all your situation, your lab parameters, and seeing if there's anything they can correct there, and then focusing on good nutrition and exercise to help you counteract some of those effects of the fatigue.
Awesome. Thank you. And there's another question from one of our participants about just getting ready for treatment. What should I do to get ready for treatment? And Dr. Peters, could you address that question, please?
Well, that depends what kind of treatment and what stage. I think, you know, if it's the very first treatment, meaning the induction, the very first time after the diagnosis, you know, I mean, everything should happen very swiftly and quickly. There's really not much one can do except starting treatment, because with the treatment or with the effects of the treatment within a couple of weeks, patients often feel better. Of course, there may be a time where there's a little downtime for a couple of days, but essentially with wiping out the leukemia cells from the bone marrow, the normal cells come back, the normal immune system comes back, the red cells come back, there's more oxygen around, there's more strength. If it's, you know, consolidation treatment or maintenance treatment, just in between those cycles or in between those treatments when the patient is at home, you know, depending what the blood counts are, you know, just live your good, healthy, normal life, have a good attitude. I mean, I think it sounds more difficult than it is, but, you know, and essentially I tell my patients, based on what their blood counts are and if they had any other complications, you can do everything you want to do. You should be a little careful if your blood counts or your white blood cell count is low, which puts you more at risk of infection. But if they're normal, you should not avoid living as good as you can your normal life, as long, you know, as the patient has the strength and it's medically safe to do. If it's a transplant, going in for stem cell transplant, for example, that's obviously there's a little bit of planning time involved. And I think having good social support is important. Connect with your family, your friends. Social workers are very important. Any part of the healthcare team really, you know, makes a difference. So really reach out to everybody in the healthcare team. And maybe the last thing I want to say, if a patient or if you as a patient do not have the answer or something is unclear or uncertain, really ask a healthcare team. You know, every doctor, every nurse, every social worker, every transplant coordinator, you know, every research coordinator, they should give you the answer. And we may not always have the answer. At least we can talk about it, or then let me ask Dr. Tibas, let me ask somebody else. You know, because for the patient, it's the first time, and the patients often don't know what's next. So never hesitate to ask your doctor about what's to expect and what's next and bring up any point in your treatment. I think it's very important.
Excellent. Oh, thank you so much. That's really important.
And if a doctor doesn't give you the answer, you have to pin him down. So the doctor owes you the answer.
Well, that's really good. That's helpful for everyone to hear, because I know that often people might be reticent to ask a question. So I think you're getting right from Dr. Tibas how important it is to ask those questions and really get the answers that you need. And actually to use this program as a chance to ask questions that you can then take back to your treating healthcare team, but you've already had the chance of a practice run here. So I invite you to do that as well. We have another question from one of our online participants. The question is about how would I find a clinical trial in my local area. How do I go about doing that? Dr. Litzo, could you address that, please?
Sure. There's two things you can do. One certainly is to ask your medical team what they have available, and they may know of trials at nearby medical centers as well. There is a website that the National Cancer Institute has called clinicaltrials.gov. So it's just clinicaltrials.gov, where all clinical trials are listed, and there's a search function that you can use there to look. Another option is to call the Leukemia Lymphoma Society, LLS. And I think their website is maybe lls.org, but if you just search for Leukemia Lymphoma Society, most if not all states have state branches of that society, and you can call your state organization, and they would likely be able to help you in that area as well.
Excellent. Thank you. That's wonderful recommendations, and indeed we'll be sending out to everybody that information, but indeed, those are wonderful resources to get the most up-to-date information on clinical on trials. We have another question from one of our participants is, how can I better manage the side effects of chemotherapy? And although you addressed that, Dr. Lissa, I wonder if you could say a bit more about that.
Well, I think, again, that's good communication with your healthcare team and making them aware of what you're dealing with, what side effects you're having, and if you're on treatments for them, how well they're working. Because sometimes, in terms of the neuropathy that I mentioned, the peripheral or the nerve damage in the feet and hands that people can develop, there's a variety of treatments that we can use for that, and sometimes one works for one person and another will work for another person. The things you yourself can do, again, and I sound like a broken record, but exercise and good nutrition can help counteract some of the side effects that you deal with treatment. There are complementary and alternative approaches that can be used, but again, that needs to be carefully discussed with your team. Many medical centers have complementary alternative medicine consultation services. We have such a group here at Mayo Clinic, and we often refer our patients to them, and we can work with them to try to help find ways to lessen and cope with some of the side effects you might be experiencing.
Excellent. Thank you. Those are wonderful recommendations. And another question from one of our online participants, are there any extra measures I can take during cold and flu season? And, of course, I believe that throughout this country and perhaps internationally as well, the weather has been a bit, this has been a challenging winter for many. So, Dr. Tibas, could you have any comments to make about this and also the role of flu vaccines and other type of vaccines during treatment? And if you could comment on that as well.
Mm-hmm. So the leukemia itself suppresses the immune system. So once the leukemia fills out the bone marrow, you know, the immune system is already unfortunately not as functional. So the treatment or the chemotherapy itself does have the effect that it wipes out the leukemia cells, but also the normal cells. So for some time in the first couple of months and cycles of treatment, and one cycle is one round of therapy for a couple of days, then 2 or 3 weeks waiting for recovery of the counts, and then going back in for another treatment. So there will be times, so for the first therapy, the higher the white blood cell count, the more protection there is against infections. So having said this, obviously when we need to treat the leukemia, we unfortunately also treat or lower the normal white blood cell count, which then in addition gives it a lower protection from infections. So in those times, what we call the neutropenic times or the neutropenia, patients just need to practice, re-counsel, and educate them about neutropenic precautions. A couple of simple things I tell my patient, essentially, if somebody's obviously sick, stay away a little bit. So if everybody in your surrounding is coughing and is coughing in the hand and they want to shake your hands, just stay away. If you're in those days or week or 2 weeks when you're really neutropenic, meaning have a very low white blood cell count and neutrophil count, and your doctor will tell you that. If you have small children or grandchildren or something, if the whole kindergarten is sick, the whole school is sick, and that little grandchild is sick and is just coughing for the last 3 days, maybe stay away for 1 or 2 or 3 days until they recover. Of course, you can't change your whole life, and that's important for you, you know, being healthy, being around your loved ones and friends and somebody else. Once, you know, those cold and other people around you have resolved, you can, you know, interact with them again. You should be careful avoiding, in those neutropenic times, avoiding large crowds. You know, obviously don't go to a concert or something like this, or large crowds in, you know, in church or some other gatherings. But, you know, if your white blood cell count has recovered in between those treatment cycles, you can go to those events and live your social life. The other thing is, similar to if you travel to countries where the hygiene is not as good, peel it, cook it, or leave it. So essentially, if don't eat too much raw food, or don't eat any raw food or raw meat, don't eat any raw sushi or any raw fish or halfway cooked steak, because there may be some bacteria or some other organisms in there that sometimes, you know, can infect you more frequently if your white blood cell count is down. So just really cook your hamburger and your steak. It may not taste as good. Do not go to an open salad buffet or somewhere else, in a restaurant where you don't know how long something has been sitting out in a buffet. If you eat something at home, you know, have yourself or have your loved ones or whoever is there, wash things very well. If you eat salads or tomatoes, really wash it very well. That's what I usually tell my patients. Or cook it very well or leave it. So those are a couple of easy rules. And sometimes, depending where you are, if it's very windy, you may wear a mask because there are some spores and some other things in the environment. Wash your hands frequently. Make sure nobody coughs on you. In a way, very normal precautions, I would say.
Excellent. These are very helpful and very important tips for everybody on this call. And the last question, Dr. Lutzow, if you could comment on this one. Are there any new developments with immunotherapy when treating ALL?
Yes, there are. I didn't use that term, immunotherapy, but the monoclonal antibody therapy that I talked about and that Dr. Tevis talked about with things like the blinatumomab and the CAR cells, the chimeric antigen receptor T cells, these are all examples of immunotherapy. So these two examples, and then there's some other monoclonal antibody type treatments. There is a drug that's in development called inotuzumab. This is an antibody that reacts against another protein on the leukemic blast cells, the B type. This is a CD22. We talked about CD19 earlier. Inotuzumab is linked to a chemotherapy drug, so it brings the chemotherapy drug right in proximity with the leukemic cell, to kill it. So this is another example of immunotherapy. And allogeneic transplant that Dr. Tebus talked about is ultimately really a form of immunotherapy because we're trying to use the immune system of the donor to help fight the leukemia. So there are many examples of immunotherapy. Bone marrow transplant is the oldest one. It's been around a long time, and it also relies on chemotherapy that's given with it. But there's definitely a component of immunotherapy involved there as well.
Thank you very much. And Ms. Chita, a question for you about support groups and how do I find one in different parts of the country, if you could comment on that.
Sure. In different parts of the country, if you're looking for something to attend locally and, you know, see other people in person, I would recommend first going to your hospital social worker if there's one available there and asking about, you know, available support groups. Sometimes they're actually in the hospital or treatment center or they may know of ones in the area. American Cancer Society is a good source for that information as well, either if you call them or on their website, which is cancer.org. So I would start in one of those two places. A lot of times other, you know, other patients that you talk to may already be attending a support group, and it's a great way to find one that, that, you know, you think might be a good fit for you and that has been very helpful to them. You can certainly call us on our HOPE line, 1-800-813-4673, and we can search around using information that we have in our databases to help you find something close to you as well.
And we also, for our international participants, they participate in our online groups. Is that correct as well? Just so for everyone
Absolutely.
To know if there's something for So we have online
well,
groups
maybe
here.
One, Carolyn, if I may add here something, yes. Just 1 minute. What I tell my patients, of course, everybody wants to go to the Internet and go to Google and everything, and everybody feel free to do that. You know, just keep in mind sometimes what you find out there on the Internet, it's often the bad stories. Actually, we have done a lot of progress. So what I refer my patients to, go to one of the big cancer centers or one of the academic centers. A lot of them have information about ALL on their website as well. It doesn't matter if it's the Mayo Clinic or some other big academic hospital, depending which country, but I would rather go to the LLS, ACS, or some of the, you know, big cancer centers where get your information from there, because otherwise it can be kind of worrisome what you read out there on the Internet.
Actually, that's an excellent point, and I think that today you've had information about some of the major places to go to, and indeed we encourage you to do that. Also, you can contact Cancer Care, also because we do, some of our programs are available to people, because they are virtual programs or on the telephone or online, that people can participate, particularly on the online groups, no matter where you are, you can listen to them if you like using a computer for that, and if you like a telephone group, we have those as well. And for those of you who can travel and go to a center near you for a group, that also can be a wonderful way to get help. But we do recommend that you attend professionally facilitated groups that are done by some of the major centers, I think, as Dr. Tibbetts has just said, so that's important. I want to thank all of you. This has been an extraordinary call. Wonderful speakers today, really a winning team. And I also want to thank all of you, with really many of you posting such excellent questions. We have more questions than we could possibly take, so I know that you're going to want to call Cancer Care at the end of the call. So I do want to, in terms of wrapping things up, this is a one-hour workshop, and that in planning a program like this, we do know that you have many questions and concerns that go far beyond the scope of 1 hour. So I want to again remind you of the services you can access from Cancer Care from our oncology social workers, and they are here to provide free service to you, both in terms of practical and financial assistance, also in terms of counseling, a chance to talk with somebody who's professional about your concerns, and support groups both on the telephone and online. Those can be quite wonderful to access. And also we have lots of workshops like this on many different topics. You have information about that, as well as we also have many publications as well and a very a robust website as well to visit. Most importantly, as we conclude this program today, I don't want anyone to think that you're alone. I want you to know that you're now part of the Cancer Care community and that you can contact us at 1-800-813-HOPE. We are simply a telephone call away. Or you can visit our website at www.cancercare.org and really know that we're here to help you. And I want to thank you all for participating today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop. You may now disconnect, and everyone have a wonderful day.